So I'm 33 years old. I am crash landed in a city south of Albuquerque called Belen, which is Spanish for Bethlehem. Mm. And for the first time in 700 and some odd years, the Star of Bethlehem is in the sky.
Wow.
And then I get a call about this show.
Hmm.
You can call it coincidence. Maybe it's my brain putting all of those things together, but it's a little bit too much. It's God-cidence, you know?
Hmm.
33, Bethlehem, first time in 700 years that this star is out, and we won't see it again in our lifetime.
Hmm.
And then I get called on the show.
Well, welcome back to Good Business, guys. I've got kind of a deviation from the norm. We don't have business talk today, but we are talking about faith-based filmmaking. It's an industry that's been changing dramatically for really the past few years, honestly. We all have these like normal stipulations of Christian films kind of being that that Hallmark regurgitated story over and over and over again. And the past few years, it's just been a massive change. And I'm very honored to have who you all know probably as Big James, the amazing and talented Abe. He is on today to chat about The Chosen series, which is currently going into season 4. And Abe, Big James, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It's really good to be here. And I just want to say that if we are going away from what we're used to talking about in this show, then I'm going to give you a line that we always say on The Chosen, which is get used to different, you know? Hey, by the way, I don't even speak like this, man. So like, I just wanted to like, you know, I think that people are so used to seeing me with a beard and
yeah.
and speaking that accent. So like, sometimes I wonder, it's like, especially when I shave the beard, will they recognize me more if I do the accent?
Oh my gosh, you
know,
absolutely.
Like, I don't know. But yeah, get used to different. We're a little bit off topic, you said. I like it. We're already setting ourselves apart.
I love it. I love it. So for all of you guys, if you haven't seen The Chosen, I encourage you to watch it. If it's purely for the entertainment value, it's very well produced and it's an amazing story.
Absolutely.
So with that said though, before we dive into The Chosen,
sure.
No one really knows who you are.
Right.
So
right.
Abe, who are you and what's your background?
Yeah. So, my name is Abe and you know, my name has changed throughout the series and I just like want to tackle it too. Cause like, I do enjoy a lot of anonymity. I like my personal time. I like analog world. Yeah. Digital world is definitely a part of my life like everybody else's, but I always wanted to keep things separate.
Yep.
for a reason, which is like, you know, people like to clock out of work, man. You know,
yeah.
And so it wasn't until I realized the impact that season 2 was having,
yeah,
that I decided to take the first step out of the box, which is to say, I actually do want my family's names to be associated with a project of this magnitude,
mm-hmm,
right? So my name is Abraham Bueno Jalad. My mother is Mexican and my father is of Middle Eastern descent. I grew up speaking Spanish and I kind of grew up in a trilingual home and in a wow. bilingual setting in El Paso, Texas,
wow.
right? 80% of El Paso speaks Spanish. I grew up with white people speaking Spanish. So when I left, I was like, why didn't nobody speak Spanish? You know? So, yeah. And then that's kind of like, I can talk a lot and I had a lot of coffee. So
we'll
start selling tractors, bro. 2,500 of an hour. You know what I'm saying?
No, that's like, great. That's great.
So, but yeah, that's kind of the gist of it. And I think that people enjoy me as Big James and, you know, I think that it's a godsendence, not coincidence that I'm playing Big James, who also happens to be a saint that's very big in Spain.
Mm.
So yeah, things have aligned in this way that I really didn't have anything to do with this, man. I'm just enjoying the ride as much as you guys are.
That's
you know?
So cool. That's so cool. All right. So you went to USC, right?
I did. I got my master's, in dramatic arts
from USC, University of Southern California. I graduated with, just a shout out to the UT system, I graduated with a degree in linguistics with a minor in psychology and Spanish from the University of Texas in El Paso. Go Miners. I still bleed orange. But, so really when I decided to go to grad school, it wasn't something that was financially available to me. And I think specifically right now, people really got to ask themselves if they can afford the education. I was lucky enough to come out of UTEP without any undergraduate debt. And I went right to work in 2009. So like, it was a bad time to try and find work. You know, I got a no for McDonald's. You know,
oh my gosh.
And I needed money at this time, right? So it was a really rough go. And so just being financially practical, I decided to audition for all the top schools and kind of as a, I don't know, man, this is, I think, where the beginning of the journey really started. You know, you asked me about USC. I had no way to pay for it, man. Mm-hmm. I auditioned for NYU. I auditioned for Yale. I auditioned for New School. I auditioned for USC. And I didn't know how I was going to pay for it. And I didn't want to go into debt.
Yeah.
So what do you do? Right. And so I told my girlfriend at the time, I was like, I just want to see if they'll accept me. I want to see if I'm good enough. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I got accepted to two schools and, I jokingly said, you know, the only way I'll probably ever actually go through with this is if I get a scholarship. And then I get a letter from USC and it was like, hey, you know, please find our decision. If you have any questions about our final thoughts, please let us know. I read the letter and it's like, yeah, and we're happy to admit you with a scholarship.
Whoa.
And I was like, wow, oh my God, I'm moving to LA. And that's where it started, man.
Wow, that's so cool.
USC was, if it wasn't for that scholarship program and if it wasn't for Andy Robinson, who played the Scorpio Killer in Dirty Harry, you know, so he also played Garrick on Star Trek.
Wow.
And he started that program and I'm of the last class of his lineage. He started the program and he was a professor. You'd have like an intense 4-hour class with him. And I am proud to say that I'm of his lineage because he did make a program that was accessible for people like him, you know, who I think Andy's father, I mean, now we'll do an interview with Andy, right? But like Andy's father, you know, died in the war and he was just roughing it in New York until he got his start and got his career going. So definitely made it accessible for some of us, you know? And USC was the beginning of what I call like my warm up to being in an environment with 12 other individuals all the time. So when I got on The Chosen, I was like, I've done this already.
I'm used to this.
Because anytime you get that many people together, you know, there's going to be a 10 cooks in the kitchen moment, no matter what, right? And it's not about conflict and it's not about focusing on that, but it's just about the nature of when groups of people gather, these sort of things will happen, right? So USC, like I said, I feel like it was a great warm-up for me coming into this show and being like, all right, here we go again.
That's amazing. Know? That's amazing. So did you always want to be an actor? When did you know?
23. I was 23 years old.
Cool. So after undergrad.
Yeah, I'd always dabbled with it. I was either the linguistic. So after college, I moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I worked at in mental health, the Center for Rural and Community Behavioral Health, CRCBH. Shout out wherever y'all are at. Thank you. That job saved my life. Being in touch with the community in that way and seeing the trials and tribulations of underserved communities let me know how I was also a product of these sort of communities as well. And just the things to watch out for, man. Like when you're on the edge of finance or behavioral or mental health problems, all it's going to take is like one small thing and you just have a whole 6 months to deal with. Like one problem can snowball into 6 months of problems. And it was something that just sitting there and collecting the data of the population who was going through these problems helped me understand how I can create stop gaps and resilience against those sort of things.
Yeah.
So that job changed my life without a doubt. And I was very happy. Once again, I auditioned for grad school on a whim.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
I had a really great life. And I was like, if it gets better than this, I'm lucky. Right?
Man, what a great spirit.
Right? Wow. Thank God, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was when I was in Albuquerque. It was getting to the point where my acting work was interfering with my real life work, or my real life work was not letting my acting work grow.
Oh, that just proves that that's your passion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was the linguist with an acting problem or an actor with a linguist problem, you know? And that's just, I was grateful to reach the point where I was like, all right. And I wrote it down in my journal. I remember saying like, okay, I think I'm going to do this for real now. Wow. And it was very scary. Like, so how do you do it, right? Mm. Well, you can't have that comfy cush job that affords you that four-bedroom home that you're renting in Albuquerque. I went from a four-bedroom to like a 900 square foot, you know? And here I was, I did all the right things to sort of say, okay, cool. You know, you go out there, you get the degree, you get the job, you get the house, you have, you know, you get married. And I sort of had to put pause on that life because I hadn't done that for acting. Wow. You know, I hadn't gone through the process. I hadn't given myself the luxury of living that life. Mm. And then I think I thought that it was going to be difficult. And it was probably about 10 times harder than I thought.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. I knew it was going to be hard. I had no idea what hard was. Mm. You know, my car broke down the second day in LA.
Gosh. Wow.
Dude.
And I'm sure when you moved out to LA, you were probably like, did you have any family community out there or were you?
I had one friend from high school. And he moved out 3 weeks later.
Oh my gosh.
He moved up to Northern California.
He's like, peace.
Yeah. And a lot of my family were, they were part of the Bracero program, like basically picking food in Northern California. So, but they were hours away.
Wow.
So if I ever wanted that kind of sense of family, I'd have to drive up there, which again,
is like
not practical.
Cross country.
Yeah. It's like 9 hours, you know? So yeah, I was alone. And I often tell people like, if you live in LA and you have family, dude, you're so lucky.
Mm.
You're so lucky because that city was so big. And I am glad that I had New Mexico to sort of prep me for Los Angeles. Because New Mexico, I was only ever going to be 4 or 5 hours top. That Goldilocks zone, as I call it. Like, if you're 5 hours from home, that's about as far as you can get, you know? Anything after that, then you're kind of wasting half a day trying to get home. So here we are, I'm 12 hours away, right? So it just presented a whole new set of challenges that I'm very grateful for. And I'm lucky enough to have survived. Cause like you have that 20-year-old spirit, you know? And I remember when my car broke down, I took it as like an affront. I was like, oh, you're not going to get me, LA. You think this car breaking down is going to stop me?
Man.
You know? And so you have that like big 20-year-old ego, which is necessary.
Yeah.
You know, now it's like, but I mean, humbled. Mm. LA humbled me. Taught me so many things.
Well, you know? And humility is the paramount to success. I mean, if you don't have humility, you will not succeed.
Yeah.
I mean, arrogance is such a turnoff for everybody, and you're not going to be able to get your foot in the door anywhere. I mean, no one wants that on set.
And
so
it's 100%.
Yeah.
And entitlement happens, you know, but arrogance is another thing. Like walking into the room and owning it and being kind of that central force of yourself. You know, that's what everyone preaches, but then like not actually owning it, everyone can sniff that out, man.
Yeah.
You know, everyone can sniff it out.
Yeah.
And like I said, LA does, you know, certainly does. You know, I was like day two, taking the train. There's no, you know, and then people are like, you did what? Because like in New York, take the trains all day,
not
take the
LA.
Bus. LA people were like, people thought I was insane. You know, I was just like,
oh,
no, man,
great.
That's how you save money.
That's how you make it.
That's how you make it.
So fast forward. So what was the time gap between you showing up in LA and you auditioning for the first time with Dallas?
2018.
Okay.
I have a memory like an elephant. So
okay, great.
I know kind of when it was fall of 2018 is when I believe I auditioned for the project.
Okay.
And I had graduated May of 2016.
Okay.
And just like right into the Uber life, man. You know, like just start driving, brother. Because LA waits for no man.
Oh, man. I'm sure there's some folks that you probably Ubered around. They're like, I've seen him.
Dude,
I'm
pretty sure that I Ubered somebody from that show, Nashville. I'm pretty sure I did, but I couldn't remember who it was.
Oh, that's great.
So like, just like little stories like that. Yeah. But so 2018, I get this script and I'm still acting, man. I'm still cobbling together whatever I can. You know, you have your regular job and then you're probably putting in another extra 20 to 30 hours trying to cobble. It's a forever side hustle.
Yeah.
And even when I'm done with The Chosen, I got to like find out where the money's coming from next.
Yeah.
It's just like practical finance. And no one tells you when you're deciding to do this for a lifestyle.
Yeah.
So yeah, I audition, I read the script and I was like, and it's low budget. Right. And so like they kind of like label these auditions, like, hey, it's a low budget. And rightfully so, the industry never knows what position you are in financially.
Right.
Right. And your agents don't necessarily care if you didn't make the rent. That's not their problem, man. Their job is to get you an audition.
Yeah.
So you get like a little star. Hey, it's a low budget. So if this might put you in a bad way taking on this project because it doesn't shoot in LA. So now you gotta think about all of these logistics, right? Yeah. So I get it and I was like, eh, let's read it. And I read it and it is so good.
Mm.
And I was like, what?
Wow.
No way. Like it's coming off the page. I already see it,
wow.
You know? Cause like that's really where it begins. And I think that people would ask us like, okay, so like, is it just that the show was made and then it was good? Now for me, the show was good from the moment I read the script before Dallas had ever shot a single minute of footage.
Mm-hmm.
I read that script and I was like, Wow. This is just, it's going to be good no matter what, because I don't have to help it.
Mm.
I don't have to make these moments come to life. I do, but it's already on the page, man.
Yeah.
You just got to get in there and enjoy the ride, you know? So I auditioned for Simon Peter and it was a scene where he's talking to Eden about, you know, basically being in a pinch, you know, being in a pinch with the taxes, which we've all been to. Like if you haven't, just get out of there. Don't don't be in a pinch with the tax man, you know? And it was really cool because I'm gonna say cool, but I'm sure for the person that was dating me at the time, being broke and covering my half of the rent was not fun. So what was cool about it is that I actually understood those words because I was living them. I was living them, man. I was pinned for like three commercials. And mind you, like 2017 and 2016, I had some good commercials. We were flush, baby. We could afford the groceries. The gas was coming in. And then all of a sudden, 2018, it's dry. And I find myself in the exact same way that Simon Peter is. So I do that scene and I'm not acting, man. I'm literally talking to the woman that I was with at the time and being like, my subtext was, I can't pay rent. You know?
You had plenty of motivation behind that.
Yeah. So I send that off. I don't hear anything.
Hmm.
And then no surprise. That's the way it works in the industry. No, there's no feedback, by the way. Yeah. If they call you back, that means you're closer. If they don't call you back, you can't take it personal.
Yeah.
You know, because it's 10 years of nobody calling you back.
Mm.
So you just got to get used to it. And so the weirdest thing happens. My manager calls me and says, hey, man, you remember that thing? Yeah. The show I auditioned for. Yeah. Well, the director wants to Skype with you. And I was like, oh man, maybe we got something, you know? So I get in there and I was like, this is it. We made it. We're in the show, you know? And Dallas just like the ever gentleman that he was. And he really handles himself with a lot of humor and a lot of grace. And so he calls me and he tells me that, you know, hey, we couldn't find a place for you, man. And he tells me, he says these words, I can't get your audition out of my head.
Wow.
You know? And so it was like a call to tell me that I didn't get it.
Well, that's better than nothing, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was, and I remember posting about it. I can't, maybe Facebook. Oh, this would be interesting to try and find it in the digital format. But I just was saying like, hey, we didn't get it, but I got something, which was feedback.
Yeah.
And that felt good. That Dallas gave me that little bit of energy that I needed to push through 2018. And by the way, I didn't book a single thing in 2018.
Oh my goodness.
It was, and then my dog died November of that year.
Oh my gosh, that sounds
so
terrible.
It was like, bam.
Terrible year.
You know, and then 2019 comes around. Same, like, you know, pretty dry year. In terms of theater stage work, you know, you're not making much, man. You may make, like, if you have a good theater job, you're making $600 a week.
Wow.
So
that's not survivable in LA.
No, it's not, man. Yeah. No, you're losing money doing theater. And those are the good jobs. I was lucky enough to score two of those in 2019, but that it's just money in, money out. You just got to keep the door revolving so that you can make it. So yeah, 2019, I don't hear anything. The Chosen, as far as I was concerned, was something of the past, but...
Because they had already started production, right?
They'd already started production. They were already shooting more episodes. I'd already auditioned again for other roles, for Thomas, for Simon Z, and nothing, man. Wow. Just not hearing it. And so you... Then boom, right? Pandemic. Mm-hmm. And the world changes, and...
That's not good for an actor.
No, no. I sent an email to everybody and I was like, hey, it's been a good ride. I got to take things seriously now. I'm in my 30s. I've been doing this since, really, I've been giving up regular work jobs and quitting, right? Because like, that's really what it is, man.
Yeah.
You don't even want to go to the job and tell them you're an actor in LA, because then they'll be like, oh, he's going to quit the second he gets something. So you're just like, yeah, I'm here. Here I am again. Mm. And I want this job. And then boom, all of a sudden you have to quit. Mm. So I'm working a regular job. The pandemic hits. Luckily, my survival job wasn't too affected by it. And then, you know, because no commercials were being shot, like some of the commercials that I did in 2016, 2017 got replayed. Wow. And so actually the pandemic was really good for me.
Wow.
Not really good for a lot of people, but honestly, I did well. And then all of a sudden I get a call again about somebody knocking on my door about The Chosen. And I was like, you know what, guys? Like, I had already sent off an email to my representatives and I said, hey, as eager as that 25-year-old was that walked into your office, I know when the race is over and my time is now.
Wow.
My time is done. Like, as sure and as confident as I was, I'm as sure and as confident to tell you I'm done.
Wow.
So I wrote an email to everybody. And, you know, I had people calling me like, hey, don't make any rash decisions. I was like, there's no rash decision. I got to go make rent. That's the rash decision.
Wow.
You know, this is not me. So yeah, apparently Dallas contacted my old reps at that point then. Mm-hmm. Was like, hey, and then they were like, he's not acting anymore.
Wow.
And I got to thank Dallas for this. I don't know why you did this. You crazy man. You're crazy for this. But he said, find Abe.
Wow.
Whatever it takes, find him. So he contacted my New Mexico agent, who I hadn't heard from in 10 years. And I'm moving my stuff from LA back to New Mexico. Because, right, I was like, the worst thing that can happen is I move back to New Mexico. So here it was, worst case scenario, right? And I get a call from him. I get a call from the agent. And thank you, Lynette, too, if you ever listen to this. Talk about good business, right?
Yes, sir.
She calls me and she's like, what's going on? And we have like this, I tell her like, Lynette, I'm out of the industry, right? She listens to my whole blathering about how terrible the world is and how I'm not going to audition for this job.
Wow.
How I don't care about it anymore. I'm 33 years old. I got to start putting away for my future. Otherwise, this is a sinking ship. And she doesn't address anything that I said. She just says, thank you, Lynette. She just says, so how long do you need to get this audition in? She did like just completely.
Oh, that's amazing. She just ignored you.
She just ignored me.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, she's not giving me an option. And I was like, 2 days, which is a lot. Like, it was 4 pages. You don't need 2 days. I was like, 2 days, because like I literally had to unpack that whole part of my life, put it up again, do the whole song and dance. And I did it, man. And I was very reluctant. I kind of did it. I was like, whatever, man. Just I'll do this and then I'll get back to figuring out my life again. I didn't hear back for several weeks. And then I get a call and it's like, hey, dude, they lost Big James. You're a series regular. Fly out to Utah. You start in 4 days.
Oh, my gosh.
And that was that, man. And I've been on that journey ever since.
Wow.
Life was not the same.
Wow. Well, I can imagine.
Yeah.
So obviously that call, that's a game changer in your career and your life.
Yeah.
What did it feel like? Were you still reluctant at that point? And you're like, no, I've already made a decision to move on. God's doing something here.
Yeah. Well, we were going to get into it. There's probably some details that I got to save for my autobiography.
That's
otherwise, it's not going to sell. No, I'm just kidding.
That's
no,
fair.
But we'll go ahead and we'll talk about this. I think I've only talked about this one time. There was so much silence in the world at that time. I don't know if you guys remember the pandemic. Everything was quiet, and I think I needed that quiet to hear him again. You know. So I'm 33 years old. I am crash landed in a city south of Albuquerque called Belen, which is Spanish for Bethlehem. And for the first time in 700 and some odd years, the Star of Bethlehem is in the sky.
Wow.
And then I get a call about this show. You can call it coincidence. Maybe it's my brain putting all of those things together, but it's a little bit too much. It's God-sidence, you know? 33, Bethlehem, first time in 700 years that this star is out, and we won't see it again in our lifetime. And then I get called on the show.
Wow. That's God's grace right there. So whether you want to call it a coincidence or not, God is having grace on you.
Yeah.
And that's so cool.
Yeah, it was a hard time, man. It was a hard time. I lost my grandfather during the shooting of season 2, you know, which also propelled me to go back to my real name and accept what has been given to me, right? Not distance myself from it. And I need to distance myself from it because I can't answer the 17 different messages that I get in my inbox about how this show has changed people's lives. That's really great, but there's just not enough human hours of it. So I'm very grateful for this. I'll definitely, well, there it is. You got the story, man.
I love it.
So that's something that I haven't actually shared anywhere else because I haven't wanted to. God doesn't need me to share this because he still is running everything. But here we are in this moment. And so it presented an opportunity. And so maybe for anyone who's down on their luck, sometimes we can ask for so much, but are we listening? You know, are we listening? I wasn't listening, man. I was not listening. I was so caught up in my money, worldly problems, you know, I wasn't listening. And then it can change like that, you know, so it did. And here I am. Here we are, Clay.
Here we are. Man, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I'm honored.
Yeah, thanks. Here we are.
So on a lighter note, so we talk about The Chosen. This is what you were pursuing for years. You were pursuing this opportunity on The Chosen. For anyone who's tuning in and may not be aware of The Chosen, what is The Chosen and what is the role that you play?
Okay, so The Chosen is a piece of entertainment, right? That's something that we also have to get through to people. As impactful as it is a show that's about the life of Jesus Christ. And it started out and it is very much through the eyes of the disciples.
And the name The Chosen.
Who the disciples, which he chose, which he called, right? And I play Big James, who I always think about selling the show to the people that haven't seen it. Right? Because I'm as much as we needed the fans, I really do believe that it's a piece of entertainment that anybody can watch and be impacted on. And that's why it's doing so well, right? Yeah. And I have a burden for the people that aren't necessarily called to this story or attracted to it because of some preconceived notions that they might walk into the situation with, right? Yeah. So it's a multi-seasonal TV show. episodic about the life of Jesus Christ. And there is an entertainment component where we have to find the gray area from scripture, from history, to create this entertainment. Mm-hmm. And I think that we do a pretty darn good job of it, man.
I agree.
I think the perspective that we have and the way that we tackle certain things is something that hasn't been done before.
Yeah.
And I can see that the industry has eyes on us, mm-hmm. because we're doing something. We started a real movement, you know? And not just we, like the sector is growing. Faith-based sector is growing. And so what does that say about entertainment? And what are the stories that people want to listen to? I don't like to look at it as like us versus them, like faith-based versus, it's just sure. all entertainment.
Yeah.
Right. And you can take things from, and I've have seen it, like there are auditions that are coming through there. It's changing the conversation. People want stories about wholesomeness, about trials and tribulation, and about coming out on top with a different perspective, with a change,
yeah.
you know? So I think that our show serves that purpose. And we also have a great, you know, source, like the original source is pretty good.
The best story ever told.
Yeah. I mean, it is a story that changed the history of humanity.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's a long-winded way of saying we're a show about Jesus, right?
I love it. I can only imagine what it's like being on set. I can only imagine. I mean, obviously you're getting into character,
yeah.
and you're in character in one of those. And I mean, I remember like there's several instances throughout the series, like the woman who was ill for so many years and she mm-hmm. touched Jesus's robe. And I mean, that was such an impactful scene for my entire family. And
I got to see it, man.
I know you got to be there.
So
I'm like, okay, all right. Reality check. Obviously you're acting, but you and the entire cast, you're doing such a great job, like helping the audience transport into yeah. that narrative. So what does it feel like to be on set?
You know, I've said this before, but I think it bears repeating. You guys are watching it and I get to do it. So like, I know you guys think you're getting the sweet part yeah. of the deal, but I have to actually live it, you know? So like people often ask me like, what is it like? Well, I don't have to create anything, man. Those yeah. are real walls.
Yeah.
We really are in this first attempt to kind of capture yeah. the accuracy of first century garb. And in that moment, that scene that you're talking about, Jale, shout out to Jale, an amazing performance. I was yeah. so impacted watching her. And I remember she's sitting there on the ground. Mm. It's hot. She's delivering that reality and making me believe it. Wow. And I look at her at one point, because I know she's in this very, you want to respect actors when they're going there.
Yeah.
Because I consider it an offering. Mm. Yeah. We're not acting. We're offering you yeah. something. So that
vulnerability.
Yeah. And people, we're not taught to offer our vulnerability as something, mm-hmm. you know? So it's kind of like reverse what humanity has taught you and go into this place where you bare your soul. So she's doing that. And she just looks up at me for a quick second. And I'm kind of like tearing up. You know, because like the imaginary circumstances are this woman has been dealing with this for years,
yeah.
you know, and just by touching the garb, her life changes, mm. right? And she looks up at me and I just go like that, like, because it's a thank you.
Yeah.
Like, thank you for taking me there.
Yeah.
I don't have to act anymore. You're there.
Yeah.
You know, and I say that often, like everyone has their moments, you know, where they're going and they're bravely giving an offering,
mm.
you know, that this show, man, these actors that they brought on this show, you know, I speak about it like I'm not part of it, but,
they're amazing people. They're amazing. The best people.
They're great. Yeah. The performances are bar none. And
yeah.
sometimes we're tired, man. And they'll get so day players, it just mm-hmm. means they'll come and play for a certain amount of days, not yeah. necessarily the whole, shoot. Sometimes you get these day players that come in and they just give you that pick you up that you needed. You're like, thank you, dude. Thank you for bringing it
yeah.
and reminding me about this privilege. Now I got to go and give that back to you.
Yeah.
You know, so it's good.
Wow. So speaking of those experiences, obviously, like you're dealing with some of the most influential stories in history and that have shaped the course of humanity.
100%.
What has that done for your faith?
Man, I think for me, it's, well, let's look at that statement alone. A series of events that shaped humanity. What power is that? Is it you and me? It's not. We can pretend, right? We can say, ah, is this this emperor and that emperor, but it's a series of events that changed humanity. At a certain point in my life, I had to start asking myself this very simple question. Is it 100% physical or is it spiritual? And even, because sometimes I was living my life like it's 100% physical. Like the dirt is the dirt and I will become part of the dirt one day, which there is some truth to that. You know, we have to go through a physical process in order to get somewhere else, right? And some people think, some people take that bet, man. They really, they take that bet and they say, when it's done, it's done. And I think that might lead to some decisions in your life that maybe aren't as, like I said, I don't need to critique anyone's view or the way that they live their life. I'd rather just speak about the fact that I'm taking a different gamble. I actually believe that even if it's 1% spiritual, even if like you had, even if you had what happened to me, if it's 1% spiritual, that means that it's, that the 100% physical model doesn't hold water and that your bet is in the wrong, it's in the wrong pool. Right. So I wasn't necessarily ever out of my faith, but I was definitely living like it was 100% physical world. And when I began to understand that I actually don't believe that it's 100% physical. Like if you ask me right now, do you think that when this is over, it just goes black? I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I don't care what anyone says, right? Because I've had other things happen to me and it's not a, it's not something you can study through science. It's just something that I actually believe science helps. I don't see as science as this different thing. I just say it's like, oh, science is a description of the physical world. There's a spiritual component that I believe in, right? And that's it. If I believe in it 1%, then it means it's all of it. Because if it is a physical world with a spiritual component, it just means it's 100% spiritual, really. And the only person that's forgotten about it is me, right? So, oh, I'm only touching my spirit 10%, 3%. Dude, it's all spirit, man. You know, I'm just choosing to live a physical reality as opposed to one where I touch in with a different spirit. So I, the show has just reminded me that it's 100% spiritual, man.
I could not agree more.
It's 100%.
100% spiritual. I love watching the series because it's a reminder of what true, what the truth is.
Now we both said it.
The series is entertainment. So if anyone on this show is like, oh no, it's not factual here, it's not following scripture here, I don't think that was the intent. That was, I mean, obviously you want to be scriptural and you want to follow the truth, but there's a lot of gray area that wasn't in the Bible that you're trying to fill in the gaps. And so that said, the whole point of the series is to talk about the fact that it is 100% spiritual. And the reality is The Chosen is a reflection of the true story of Jesus. Jesus, fully God, fully man, came as the one and only Son of God. And spoiler alert, he gives his life for humanity so that we all might be saved.
He gives up the physical to re-enter the spiritual. So he completes this argument that I was talking about, right? He completes it. He has to give up this physical life to complete the other part. And it's a big statement.
It's a big statement.
It's a big statement.
But the Chosen series is making that statement.
And I think that, I don't know, man. I think, you know, I'm learning a little bit about what you do and you're talking about good business. There's so much of the physical world that we will inevitably deal with all the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's right there. Like sometimes I see that we have these $1 trillion, multi-billion dollar corporations, and we can't even change one thing for the better. Because we're so caught up with, once again, the physical.
Yeah.
You know, that this money, and we can't afford that many. No, we can actually afford so much more. One of the first things that impacted me about the show was realizing how much abundance I had. And it wasn't until literally portraying James in season 2, where we leave the nest of our homes, you know, yeah. Zebedee and Salome, they had sort of this infrastructure by which we could eat.
Yeah.
By which, and I often tell people, especially people interviewers, like, you, I'll do it to you.
Yeah, there you go.
Leave this microphone right now. Get up, walk, go. Go follow Jesus. You have to do that. You have to really let go of it.
Yeah.
So what does it mean? That there's actually more abundance in the world than we're realizing. It's more than just these microphones, these chairs. What a gift.
Yeah.
What a gift, right? That we have this. But imagine the stakes being that high. Tomorrow somebody calls me. He's like, dude, Abe, you got to quit acting, man. It's over. You got to follow it. Like, do we have that kind of conviction, man? Woo.
You know? Well, and that's what we talk about here on Good Business is, hey, we are not here about the dollar bill.
Right.
If you ask me to do an episode to talk about how to make more money.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to have a very hard time having that conversation without pointing it back to, all right, well, we're just going to get more money so we can give it all away. And the reality is, like, good business is stewardship. Good yeah. business is stewarding whatever God has given you. Mm-hmm. These microphones, this acting opportunity on The Chosen, it's all about stewardship and making sure that you're not in it for yourself.
Right.
You're in it for changing the lives of those around you and giving God glory.
Well, this opportunity started because both of us were interested in changing.
Absolutely.
Changing, right? The way that Clay and I met was that I was giving up my time for charity.
Yep.
Right? And I'm very specific about the things that I want to give. Like, yeah. One of the things that I'm super passionate of is like making sure that we just take care of the sand that yeah. we step on every day. And you double down with
and
me
I'm like,
on
yeah,
that.
I'm in it. Yeah. Let's do it.
So I got to thank you for putting your money where your mouth is, man.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Well, this is great. I love this conversation.
Yeah, man.
Oh my gosh. This is great, Abe. So let's talk about why you think the response to The Chosen has been so dramatic. I mean, I don't know what the latest number, you probably know better than me, but as far as I can tell, hundreds of millions of views. And I mean, I'm so impacted by all those videos that play at the end of every episode.
Yeah.
At least on the Angel Studios app. I don't know if it's on anyone else where it talks about changing
lives.
We
have a Chosen app now as well.
Oh yeah.
That's yeah. Right, yeah. That's right. So like we also have our own, you know, Angel Studios has grown and
oh my gosh.
Look, I mean,
yeah, you look at Sound of Freedom.
Yeah. I mean, like, the whole thing, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we have our own little Chosen app as well.
Oh, cool.
Right. So that feeds directly to us. So, you know, if you have the Angel Studios app, that's good, but also like the Chosen app has content, even more content now.
I didn't know that.
Right.
That's great.
So yeah. I can't even talk about it because like we're just not there yet, man.
Okay.
give it till like, there's so many things that are going to come out that the Chosen that we are doing. Mm. Right. As Angel Studios continues to grow, they are a powerful and necessary voice in entertainment. We're trying to also grow within ourselves.
That's great.
There's so much of this world that we have yet to explore, and we're so pressed for time. So yeah, there's more content that's coming out on the app. So I'm going to plug that app. You're welcome, Dallas. I love you. So yeah, the Chosen app, you'll still have access to the shows. And you'll have access to other content as well. Yeah. So there it is, man.
I love it. All right. So
wait, I didn't even answer your question, but we'll
that's
go.
Okay. No. Go for it.
It's impactful because, first of all, because of the story.
Yeah.
Right. So I can't say that we didn't have a good source material. Number one.
Yeah.
Right. Number two. This has been said a lot. How are we telling this story differently than any way that's ever been told? How do we stumble upon just happenstance? No, I think ultimately it comes down to good filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And you can make a good film and you can make a bad film.
Yep.
Guess what? We make 8 episodes. Some of them are not my favorite, you know? Some, like, I'm not going to talk about which ones, but
let's
like,
be positive.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It's not my job to talk about what doesn't work. But like, you know, the hallmark of good storytelling is always going to be important. And I think that's what we've kind of put first. There's people who have, I only have my master's, but there's people who have PhDs on why, like, for example, some great papers out of Baylor on why faith-based hasn't caught on as much as we think, right? And these are just stipulations from, you know, the scholars, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes I think the things that they wrote about were, it can get too preachy.
Yes.
It becomes inaccessible when you start telling people what they need to consume as opposed to drawing them to the story.
Absolutely.
Right? And it can... Once again, when you start telling and not showing, sometimes I think that preaching has infiltrated storytelling.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that either one is good or bad, but they are different things. And I think that from my best glance, we're trying to show more than tell you.
And that's why I think it's caught on too.
You know? And I don't ever... and. I mean, you're like, but Jesus preaches. So like, so what are we doing? Like maybe
what's even fantastic though, is like the story that is the most compelling of The Chosen isn't the sermons. I mean, the sermons are fantastic. And I think Jonathan Rumi, amazing job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my gosh. I'm just, yeah, fantastic. But it's the interactions, those micro problems that each of these characters are having to face and overcome that are practical and applicable to us.
100%. And isn't that what you want? You want to relate to the story. You don't want it to be so far above you.
Yeah.
Right. So like, all of us want to be like the superhero, right? So that's why superhero stories call to us.
Yeah.
But what happens when all of us are just human in the presence of God?
Mm.
That's what we're doing. That's the story we're telling. And do we, you can even look at the way that it's shot. Like no one ever like looks up at Jesus, like literally, I'm talking about the physical shots, without him coming down to their level. Happens to Simon Peter, happens to the, like he goes down, like who touched me?
Yeah.
Right. Right. And so I look at that as a great metaphor of like, we're just bringing a story that everybody knows down to the level that they've maybe needed to hear it from.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes it can be so inaccessible when it's too high above us, right? Mm-hmm. And Dallas says this, like he doesn't want to make it a show about just the miracles. And he has actually tried to like stay away from that as much as we can. There's stuff that we don't cover, which once again, we get critiqued about. But like, what is another healing scene going to do for us? Mm-hmm. Yes, like we love it.
It feels great.
It feels great, but like... is that the story that's really going to churn out and bring you closer? Maybe it is. Maybe you've needed healing in your life, right? Like I'm also not smart enough to answer these questions. I'm not smart enough to tell you why this show is working. I just know that it is. There's scholars out there who will take a stab at it. Some of the stuff I agree with, some of the stuff I don't know, you know, like, cause that thing, like one of the main fallbacks of faith-based media and why it hasn't grown is because people feel like they're being preached to.
Yeah,
they feel like they're being told something as opposed to shown something. But then I was like, well, we have preaching in the show. So like, I don't know.
Well, here's the deal, man. I firmly believe, and you've obviously done a great job, you and the entire team. A good story is about the hero's journey.
Yeah.
And that hero has a problem and they need a guide to help them get there. They nowhere in that journey is there a preacher required. So the reason why I think, even though the portrayal of Jesus giving a sermon, all that kind of stuff is preaching, it's still all about him guiding.
Yeah.
All about him playing the role of the guide for the disciples. And I think that's why people can relate to it.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree more on your approach there.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, hopefully we can continue to find and piece out that beautiful. I love the gray area, man.
Yeah.
The black and white's easy to spot. The gray is where that tension of life, where once again, you really have to be listening. Because it's those gray areas where it's so easy to grab onto what's black or say that's black and that's white. What happens when it's gray?
Yeah.
You know, that's when things get, that's when we start cooking, you know?
Well, and just to reinforce what you're talking about, we in this season, we have folks from the Jesus Film Project on talking about how they've pivoted since 1979.
Wow.
Because the original Jesus film has been translated over 2,000 times.
Right.
It's had the most number of eyeballs you could ever imagine. But they're still using it, but they've pivoted and they're creating short films that are similar to the same approach that The Chosen has taken, which is it's applicable life stories. There's no preaching whatsoever.
Right.
It's giving an opportunity for opening the conversation.
100%.
And people are eating it up. I don't want to spoil the podcast. I would highly recommend you tune in, subscribe now so that you can watch that episode because it's one you want to absolutely
catch.
That's
cool.
So
well, I'll definitely have to check that
out. Oh yeah, please do. Please do.
And I'm glad that once again, that this conversation has started about what is impactful faith-based media.
Yeah.
Well, it's impactful media.
Yeah, exactly. The equation never a truer word said.
The equation didn't change.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
I love it. I love it. Okay, last question, and then I know we gotta go. So I appreciate
hanging out.
We're having too much time. All right, so too much fun. Okay, so low budget. You mentioned that at the very beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, faith-based media, that is their MO.
Yeah.
I mean, it just happens. You don't have Hollywood budgets.
No.
And so,
No.
So what do you think is kind of the reason why y'all have been able to operate on such a low budget and still be so successful?
I think that you cannot go too far in this conversation without mentioning the number of people who got behind us in the beginning and before I was even in it.
Wow.
So biggest, we have the statistics, biggest crowdfunded project of all time.
Hmm.
We'd be nothing without that, man.
Wow.
We'd be nothing without that. So that's number one. How do you get that? Dude, God knows.
God, yeah.
Right. So like that's that in and of itself. Like, and I'm eternally grateful that because of that momentum that began, we are able to get bigger and bigger. But just like there were people who had nothing to do with the project who gave us that start, there were people on the ground who had nothing to do with the project and wanted to be a part of it, right? To the point where you have people offer, there's been many people along the way that have offered their time, that had offered so many things. Like there are people who keep coming back to the project because we're more of like a family now.
Yeah.
And they're forgoing money elsewhere,
wow.
Right? So that sort of movement, you can't fake the funk on that, man. You can't fake the funk. So we've had to grow and just give you an idea, right? Like season two, I can kind of tell there's about 75 to 100 people while we're making this film. Season three, we grow, man. We have our own things. Like, so it's been awesome. You cannot make these projects without having people that are all in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to get people all in without a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So look at that equation.
Yeah.
It's kind of what Dallas says. Like, it's the impossible math.
Yeah.
I really don't know how to answer that question. I myself have made short films.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a filmmaker as well. And I have huge amount of respect for the dedication that it takes, for the sacrifices that it takes for people to come. And man, if I can pay your rent for a month, I would be so happy, right?
Yeah.
But in some of these projects that I started out with, I'm like, I might be able to pay for a meal, you know? So
yeah.
We cut our teeth on low budgets.
Yeah.
We're still cutting our teeth on low budgets. Like if you think about it, we're nowhere near any of these big TV shows.
Yeah.
So that's important to say. And it creates some restrictions, I think, some very real restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
But it also creates what I call like our fans show up for the analog shots, where if it's a crowd of 5,000 people, there will be no CGI. There will be 5,000 people.
I love it.
And that's where our fans come through. You know, our fans come through for us still in that way. We need 600 people. Guess what? Guess who's showing up? That's the Chosen
amazing.
Fans.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love it.
So without you guys, it wouldn't be anything.
That's great. Well, I keep on wanting to call you Big James. Oh my
Dude,
gosh.
Call me.
Abe.
I can speak like this if you want it. So we can. I'm just kidding.
Thank you, Abe, so much for being
Dude,
here. How can people How can people engage with The Chosen?
Definitely The Chosen app. You know, if you just go to your app store, type in The Chosen, you will get the app, which, like, as I mentioned to you, there's more content that we are creating within our own selves, our own little ecosystem, that's Chosen related. So, but at this point, you can find it on Netflix. You can find it on Hulu. You can find it on anywhere that you stream. That's we so are cool. there. But I believe the third season's a little harder to find.
Right.
And that's where you do have to go into the app.
Right.
And keep an eye out for season 4. Coming to theaters near you.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Abe, thanks so much.
Dude, thank you so much, man. Awesome. Pleasure.
Yeah.
Pleasure.
All right, guys. Well, that's it for Good Business. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Abe is such a blessing to have on this set. And we'll see y'all next time on Good Business.